So this morning we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, The Science of God, right? Yeah. Chapter 1. The Supreme Lord is equal to everyone. Text 3.
Iti na sumahabhagam. Narayana gunan prati, samshaya sumahanjatas, tadbhavam chetumarhati.
Iti, thus, naha, our,
sumaha bhaga,
O glorious one,
Narayana gunan,
the qualities of Narayana,
prati,
toward,
samshayaha,
doubt.
Sumahan,
very great.
Jata,
born.
Tat,
that.
Bhavan,
your lordship.
Chetumarhati,
please dispel. Translation. O greatly fortunate and learned Brahmana, whether Narayana is partial or impartial has become a subject of great doubt. Kindly dispel my doubt with positive evidence that Narayana is always neutral and equal to everyone. Purport. Since Lord Narayana is absolute, his transcendental qualities are described as one. Thus, his punishment and his offerings of favor are both of the same value. Essentially, his inimical actions are not displays of enmity toward his so-called enemies. But in the material field, one thinks that Krishna is favorable to devotees and unfavorable to non-devotees. When Krishna finally instructs in Bhagavad Gita, Sarva Dharman Parityajamam Ekam Sharanam Braja, this is meant not only for Arjuna, but for every living entity within this universe. Okay, very interesting discussion in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Basically, the goodness of God has been challenged. The goodness of God has been challenged. Not for the first time, though. It has been done before. And probably will happen again. So we could say that the topic of this verse, the topic of quite a bit of this section of the Bhagavatam is the goodness of God. But specifically the topic of this verse... I don't own you. You're free to do whatever you want. specifically here what we have presented in this verse and in the purport is something very interesting, actually quite interesting, and very specifically it is one thing and generally it's another thing. Very specifically, it's a kind of a doubt. And generally, it is the doubting process. So, doubting process, doubts. Doubt has its opposite, and that is faith. So we could say that the topic of this is not only doubt, but also faith. Because it's like light and darkness. if you speak of one, you implicate the other, whether you mention it or not. So if you speak of a doubt, faith is implicit in that understanding. So we could say that there are three topics all connected in this verse and the purport that we're having for our meditation this morning. So one is questioning of the goodness of God, the other one is doubt, and the third one is faith. There was a comedian that was quite famous, but he made in his profession he behaved quite unprofessionally. When it came to the light of the day, it was very, very embarrassing. So I guess his fame then grew even larger. Very interesting. They said the good news travels far. Travels far, but the bad news even farther. Anyhow, he had this concept how he believes something, and he's certain about it. But again, there's this other thing that's doubting it. So at the same time, he's certain about it, but he also doubts it at the same time. And so a typical person now bounces back and forth between the faith and doubt. And it almost seems that as one feeds the other one, so one also defeats the other one. Interesting relationship between the doubt and faith. Now, faith is literally a measuring stick. It's not only measuring stick, but it's the substance, not only of measure, but it's the substance of very advancement in Krishna consciousness. Advancement in Krishna consciousness is perceived, defined, and measured by the progress of faith. And this is not a religious statement, by the way. This is just a universal fact. Most of the things a person becomes advanced in by the virtue of faith. Of course, once we had a devotee who would, every Kadashi would chant, I don't know how many rounds of, I'm not this body, I'm not this body, I'm not this body. That was his practice. Now, that's brainwashing of a sort. That does not, that's, when Krishna speaks of faith, he doesn't, Shraddha is a sort of a conviction. When we come to be convinced about something, a nature of faith is described in a saying that a person convinced against his will is of his opinion still. That's the nature of faith. So just because by some inappropriate force, one might be cornered into claiming to believe something. But belief is of such a nature. I mean, we have seen, for example, throughout the dark ages of Europe, that people would not give up their beliefs. Even at the threat of death, even slow death, would not give. That's just the nature of faith. When you come to believe that the earth is flat, just joking. Some devotees have become very upset with me now for even joking about it. That's the nature of faith. When you come to believe something, that you'll give your life for it. And you may lie to save your life, but you will not give up your faith, because that's the nature of faith. Not because we have found some solace in it, but because that's the nature of truth. When you come to know that something is true, you cannot go against it anymore. I don't know if you ever seen or yourself experienced argumentation with another person. And you may even begin the argumentation with this person with sort of a hatred of the arguments that the person, or the conclusions of the arguments the person is presenting. You may even hate the person. Some extremely worked up individuals, they may function like that. But if the person presents arguments that you in one point come to see as true, you're done. You just surrender. You become, that's it. You have seen that that is true and it's over. So that is faith. That's how faith formulates. And in Krishna consciousness, therefore, advancement is measured by and perceived as a progress in faith. What is this progress of faith? Ultimate faith is the realization and that yo mam pashyati sarvatra sarvam chamai pashyati, that Krishna is everywhere and everything's in Krishna. So the person is just absolutely perceiving Krishna everywhere, that sees everything within Krishna, and Krishna literally within everything. This is the ultimate development of Krishna consciousness. Not to be faked. I remember one devotee when he took sannyas. And he took sannyas on his own. I don't know who gave him the initiation, but doesn't matter. He was a devotee, still is a devotee. But I don't think he's a sannyasi anymore. But I remember he took sannyas, and it's quite an event when you take sannyas. The whole ceremony and everything. It's a shocker. Like really impresses upon you a couple of things. The fact that you burn all of your old clothes, it's like signifying you're burning your past. There's no more your past, it's all gone. Just your clothes, don't keep it. Don't even give it to others, just burn it. And so on. And so impressed by taking sannyas, I remember I was, I won't mention the city where I was, but we hosted him at the temple as a, not at the temple, but by the temple, close by. And he was just seeing Krishna everywhere. I opened the door and he was, wow, Krishna. It was like when Krishna acid, man. Whatever happened, he was, wow, Krishna, wow, Krishna, Krishna. It didn't last. It was artificial. It doesn't work like that. That's not faith. It was just under a slight impression of an impressive event. And so he worked himself up into this frenzy of Hare Krishna, into this frenzy of Krishna consciousness. That's not faith. That's just a fad. Do you know what a fad is? Do you know what a fad is? A fleeting fashion. That's what a fad is. Did you get that?
Fleeting what?
Fashion. So that's not it. It's like literally when a person, what's interesting, you know, to compound the issue further, there's literally a psychological phenomena. Let me see if I can remember the name. Cognitive resonance. I'm not sure what the Slovenian equivalent is of the term cognitive resonance. Anyhow, it refers to, do you know you're an academic? Cognitive resonance.
Cognitive.
Cognitive resonance is a medical phenomenon. It's a psychological phenomenon. Where there's a huge mismatch between your deeds and your thoughts. Dissonance. Cognitive dissonance. So there is a wide gap. There is a divorce between your beliefs and between your deeds. Like one don't reflect the other, and you become sort of like a split person. That's also not. That split indicates that the conviction has not become quite the faith. Because when something becomes a faith, then it's absolutely irresistible. It guides the person's life. And so progress in Krishna consciousness is perceived in terms of development of this faith. And so in the beginning, when we start to develop trust that Krishna exists, that I'm a spirit soul, that our relationship is that of a master and a servant, and things get more complicated as we go along. But after a short while, we notice the cognitive dissonance. Why? Because that conviction has not quite become the faith just yet. Quote from the Bhagavad Gita. I assume you all know this verse. Vyavasayatmika buddhir ekeha kurunanda bahu shaka hinantasha buddhayo avyavasainam. Those who are on this path are resolute in purpose. That's literally what it means. That the person has the faith. That person has developed that faith, that realization. It is the person's conscious of Krishna. And their aim is one. In other words, there is no cognitive dissonance. O beloved child of the Kurus, the intelligence of those who are irresolute is many-branched. And in the purport to this, Srila Prabhupada writes, a strong faith that by Krishna consciousness one will be elevated to the highest perfection of life is called Vyavasayatmika intelligence. What does this mean? This means that when a person has come to understand, to see, irresistibly see, that Krishna consciousness is that process by which one will realize one's all and full potentials, one's ultimate potentials. That kind of faith is called Vyavasayatmika Buddhi. And then Srila Prabhupada quotes Chaitanya Charitamrita, which defines this. It's taken as often as the definition of Shraddha. Shraddha shabde vishvas kahe sudrida nishchaya. Krishna bhakti koile sarva karma krita hoy. If you can remember just this much, like myself, you'll be good. Sarva karma krita hoy. Sarva means what? All. Sarva karma. Activities krita do. Hoy means period. Sarva karma krita hoy. By Krishna conscious, one who's Krishna conscious, really Krishna conscious, that's a person who understands that by doing Krishna consciousness, he has done all of the work. Sarva karma, all of the work is done by performing Krishna consciousness. That is faith in Krishna consciousness. That is Krishna consciousness. By the way, don't be despondent if you don't feel like this. This is a definition of an Uttama Adhikari. That's why those who are not Uttama Adhikaris, they think they need ballet dancing and karaoke singing. What's that big festival, music festival in Split?
Ultra.
Ultra, yeah. Need to check out Ultra. Is there Ultra in Slovenia, something like this? Is that festival of electronic music?
And narcotics.
Well, that's inseparable, like you can't separate energies from God. And there are a few other inseparable things. Yeah, and what's interesting, yelling at such devotees doesn't help. Why? Because their faith... what's interesting, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that everyone's full of faith at all times. But one whose faith is all Krishna, that's a Krishna conscious person. Because such a person is told by his or her faith that he needs to... It's okay, chanting Hare Krishna, and then... You know, here and there, off to a concert of electronic music and narcotics.
Excuse me.
Yeah, so that's how we conceive of, that's how we were, okay. That's how we conceive of advancement in Krishna consciousness in terms of faith. Kanishtha Adhikari, Madhyama Adhikari, and Uttama Adhikari. And the main element by which we distinguish one from the other is faith. We didn't make it up. That was given to us by our acharyas. In terms of faith, yoginam api sarvesham madgatinantaratma sharadavan. Sharadavan bhajate yomam same yukta utama mataha. Who's the best connected person? Who's experiencing the strongest connection with Krishna is the Sharadavan, the person who has faith in Krishna. Bhagavad Gita. Interesting, from the 17th chapter, Ashadadhaya hutam datam tapastaptam kritam chayat asat ityuchate partha nacha tat pritya noiha. Translation, anything done as sacrifice, charity or penance without faith in the Supreme, O son of Prita, is impermanent. It is called asat. That's like a swear word in Sanskrit language, asat, horrible. It is called asat and it is useless both in this life and the next. Very interesting. So faith plays, we can't even say that it plays an important role. It is the important thing. It is Krishna consciousness. Faith. And that's why the opposite of faith, namely the doubt, destroys Krishna consciousness. It literally takes one away from Krishna consciousness. Agyashcha shadadanashcha samshayatma vinashati. Vinashati means destruction. That the doubts destroy the self. Nayam lokosti naparo nasukam samshayatmanaha. But ignorant and faithless, the person who's lacking faith, ignorant and faithless persons who doubt, who doubt the revealed scriptures do not attain God consciousness, they fall down. For the doubting soul, there is happiness neither in this world nor in the next. Actually, we couldn't exist without faith. We're constantly permeated by faith, just not Hare Krishna faith necessarily. That's why the doubts are described in the Bhagavad Gita, or compared to what? Question to the audience. What are the doubts compared to? Jackals? Nope.
Demons,
very well. How many of you knew this? The doubts were in the Bhagavad Gita compared to demons? You didn't know this. You must have heard this. Ah, okay. Yeah. Well, but the question is, how many of you knew this? That doubts in the Bhagavad Gita are compared to demons? 1, 2, 3, 4. You must have heard this. It's hard not to hear this in Krishna. Doubts in the Bhagavad Gita are compared to demons. That's why Arjuna addressed Krishna as the killer of the demons. here's the quote from the Bhagavad Gita. From the purport, Prabhupada says, Arjuna addresses the Lord as Madhusudana because Krishna once killed a demon named Madhu. Actually, these questions, which are of the nature of doubts, should not have risen in the mind of Arjuna, because Arjuna is a Krishna-conscious devotee. Therefore, these doubts are like demons. Since Krishna is so expert in killing demons, Arjuna here addresses him as Madhusudana so that Krishna might kill the demonic doubts that arose in Arjuna's mind. So to remove doubts in Krishna, anything you do, really, if you want to become good at something or go far anywhere, you ought to remove the doubts. Sometimes devotees, practitioners of Krishna consciousness, or other faiths, what's interesting, they may feel ashamed of their doubts. I can't quite decide whether that's appropriate or not. But doubts are such a thing that they need to be dealt with. And in a way, by dealing with the doubts, the person literally makes progress in Krishna consciousness. So to be, in some societies, doubts are demonized. But the doubting process is demonized. Like, for example, I know some friends, Christian friends, who have been demonized by the institution for not having certain faith. Just because they couldn't understand, you know, the priest or whatever the institution told them A, B, and C, and they found it to be inconsistent. And they were like, that doesn't make sense, that's inconsistent, I can't believe that. Oh, the devil has taken over you. You're literally possessed by the devil. You need to be tortured. You need a treatment. Now that's not how it goes. And a society that does this, it really creates morons for followers. Do you know what a moron is? That's a very extremely stupid person. So stupid that it's not an insult, it's a medical problem. Krishna Kshetra Swami gave a he told me about it. We had a conversation. I had the opportunity to spend a few days with Maharaj, and one of the topics that came up for a discussion was something similar. And then he told me how he gave gave a lecture which I was never able to find on the internet. Maybe it wasn't recorded. Maybe Radhe Govinda can find it. You have the computer, you have the internet, you have a you have a mind of a detective. The title of the seminar was Education, Not Indoctrination. Very well, I thought. Because doubts are, among other things, doubts are a product of a functioning intelligence. Doesn't have to be only that. I can imagine that there might be some other reasons for rising of the doubt. But among other things, doubts are literally products of a functioning intelligence. And progress in Krishna consciousness, among other things, is realized by appropriately dealing with doubts. In other words, properly answering the doubts. Remember that example some minutes ago I gave about two persons arguing? And even if you hate the arguments, you hate the conclusions of the arguments, you may even hate the person, but if ultimately you come to see what the person is saying as true, you're done. You're conquered, not by the person, but by the truth. So that's how doubts need to be dealt with. And this is very appropriate. We find in the Bhagavatam that this person is not being demonized for asking these questions. Rather, these questions are going to be dealt with. And it is a good question. I have seen a fair number of times in Krishna consciousness, when certain questions are asked, then the answer was, oh, you're a demon, that's why you ask such a thing. Well, in some situations might be true. but most probably not. In most of the situations, not. So, removing the doubts is an essential component for the growth in Krishna consciousness. Yoga sanyasta karmanam jnana sanchina samshayam. Cutting the doubts. China, cutting. Samshayam, doubts. yoga sanyasta karmanam. So first thing is yoga sanyasta karmanam. The second one is jnana sanchita samshayam. These two elements. Atmavantam na karma nibadnanti dananjaya. One who acts in devotional service, renouncing the fruits of his actions, and whose doubts have been destroyed by knowledge. Jnana. Jnana sanchina. So, china means to cut. Sanchina means to cut the hell out of it. San means completely. Like, really cut it up. By what? By jnana. Jnana sanchina samshayam. This is the process of Krishna consciousness. And jnana Srila Prabhupada translates as transcendental knowledge, of course, because jnana here refers to knowledge of Krishna consciousness. Such a person is situated factually in the self. Atmavantam. Situated in the self. Thus he is not bound by the reactions of work. Na karmani. Na karmani nibadnanti. No work binds such a person. Dhananjaya, O Arjuna. And the very next verse. Tasmat jnana sambhutam hritstam jnana sinatmanam. Chitva, again, chitvainam samshayam. yogam. Atishta tishta bharata. Therefore, the doubts which have risen in your heart out of ignorance should be slashed by the weapon of knowledge. Armed with yoga, O Bharata, stand and fight. dramatic. Now, God's so much about faith and doubt. Now, it's a little something about doubting God. God's goodness has been doubted throughout history. As a matter of fact, there's the famous problem of theodicy, which states that if God exists, then God is omnipotent, all-powerful, and morally perfect. So if God is omnipotent, then He knows whether there is evil anywhere existing. And if the God is all-powerful, then He can eliminate that evil. And then if He's all good, namely morally perfect, then He would not allow evil to exist. But we see that evil exists. That this is the argument. We see that evil exists. That the evil things happen to people, and therefore this means that God therefore doesn't exist. Or if He existed, then He's not all powerful. But if He's not all powerful, then we're not talking about God. And we have such concepts. Most of the Middle Eastern tribes were, even in the Bible, Yahweh is described as one of the deities. And there are all bunch of deities, and the deities get into fist fight every once in a while. And sometimes one deity kills the other deity. And there is no more of such deity. And the question is, what kind of a God is that? It's just the powers of some relatively powerful being. So theodicy, however, for theodicy to be a legitimate question, the person would have to do what? What would that person have to prove for the problem of theodicy to be objective, real?
Existence?
The
force
behind
it.
Yeah,
that
is not just.
The tangible existence, like.
Tangible existence of what? If so, theodicy, the problem of theodicy claims that you can't have both things. You can't have God, who is an omnipotent, all-powerful, and all-good. And then at the same time, you cannot have evil in the world. So to collapse this problem, what do you need to do? Correct. Explain that there is no evil. Very well. Very logical. Or, if you want to prove that there is plausibility or some foundation to the problem of theodicy, you would have to show that there actually is evil. And what do people typically do? They don't. Typically, people who claim that there is evil, what they do, they take single aspects of a manifestation of pain in the world, and they get very emotional about it. And then all emotionally charged, they come at you, especially in public, and you tell me God exists. My baby has died. But the burden of proof is on that person to show how the death of that child is actually evil. It's painful, I can tell. It's painful to you. But how is it evil? How is it evil? Wait up. Who says that pain equals evil? If you say so, prove it. That every instance of pain is equally evil.
Also
Oh, I'm not. I have no problem with the Odyssey. I got out of it with just joking. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, but if a person comes with a Asama desire, then in this specific.
How about we leave this for the end?
Yeah. Okay.
Because I want to finish. I have a couple of more hours of notes here. Just kidding. That's a very old problem. And what's interesting, when people experience great pain, they often become or theists or atheists. Right? One person says, oh, there's so much pain. God does not exist. And the other one person says, there's so much pain. Let me take shelter of God. Same incident, two different reactions. Devotees would typically say, oh my goodness, this world is really a flop house. Do you know what a flop house is? Flop house. Flop house is one of those motels infested with roaches and meth. You know what meth is? Do you know what meth is? No, meth. The worst of drugs. Yeah, what's the full name for meth? Methamphetamine, something. It has a long name, yeah. It's like the worst of places you can rent a room in. Prostitution, drugs, alcohol, murders, cheating, lying, stealing, everything goes on there. That's a flop house. So devotee thinks, sees a pain in this world. Doesn't say it's evil, but devotee thinks, oh my God, this world is a real flop house. Let me take shelter of Krishna, get the hell out of here. Euthyphro dilemma. These are all attempts at questioning the goodness of God. A Euthyphro dilemma. I think I'm going to skip this one because it's almost 9 o'clock. By the time I explain it, and by the time the devotees get it, and then by the time I answer it, we may have some devotees walking out the door full of doubts. That'd be a great disservice. Even Balaram accused Krishna. It's not only that people of this world get worked up about against Krishna, but even Balaram accused Krishna for what? What did Balaram accuse Krishna of? You all totally know this one, but I really got you now because I'm totally shifting gears right now. Of eating dirt. Even Balaram sometimes turns against Krishna. Complaining about Krishna to Mother Yashoda. Oh, okay, just for a good measure I threw that in. I had one bhakta who just kept blaming Krishna for having had an intimate relationship with Kubja. You all know Kubja from the Bhagavatam? Oh my goodness, he couldn't get over that one. You would get an answer and he'd be okay for a couple of weeks. Then again, then we had one person we used to, Importane Center in Zagreb, right? That little shopping mall underground. And we used to do Harinam there. And one older gentleman, maybe like in his 70s, he would come every time we were there. They would come all worked up, like really angry. How many wives did Krishna have? He had a real issue with that, blaming Krishna. Krishna has been blamed for leaving the gopis and the gopas and leaving them in great agony of separation. So Krishna has been blamed many times before. In India, for years, you don't hear it anymore, probably due to all the ISKCON missionary work, education. But you used to hear all the time people accusing Krishna of being immoral for dancing with the gopis. So I will not answer any of those because I think you all have a solid understanding on that. Okay, Om Tat Sat. Now, a few topics from this verse and purport. Are there any questions or comments? Okay.
Maharaj, how would you explain the term blind faith? And is it connected to this cognitive dissonance phenomenon?
Oh, cognitive dissonance. Yeah. Probably it's got an element of it, yeah. Blind faith. Well, maybe not so, but because often what we call blind faith is a position. You see, in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a very interesting discussion on the development of faith. And you know, when I was reading this morning of this purport and the verse and thinking about the whole matter, I was really thinking, how much to expand on this, because you could continue to expand forever. In the 17th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, there's a feedback. There's a discussion of faith, the nature of faith, and also different ways in which faith formulates. As much as we would want to think of ourselves as rational beings, that much we're wrong. Faith in people arises, according to what Krishna says, at least in the Bhagavad Gita, at the end of it, that faith arises due to sattva-anurupa. Sattva-anurupa sarvasya shraddha bhavati bharata. That faith arises according to our lifestyle. Sat means existence. Sattva means the nature of existence. Tva in Sanskritam is ness in English, like redness. Oh, there's some redness on your hand due to scratching or mosquito bite. Means the quality of redness. So sattva, the quality of existence. So according to the quality of existence, our faith formulates. And Srila Prabhupada then further that translates as according to the modes of nature that characterize our life, we develop a particular kind of faith. And so that's why you have, even within religion, you have different types of religion. Religion, the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. Pedro and myself wanted to do a documentary on. It's a fantastic idea. I was happy for him to get married and have kids, but now the documentary will have to wait some 20 years or so. It's a fantastic topic for a documentary, like a good, solid, really good documentary. How many people, people very often speak of religion as one homogeneous thing. Okay, it is homogeneous in a sense that there is something as religion, but it's so variegated. You can't say religion causes wars. That's stupid as hell. As if there is no different types of religion. Or if people conceive of religion in different types, they conceive of religion not in terms of quality of faith or quality of lifestyle, but according to a tradition or institution, meaning very grossly externally divided. Okay, that's a Christian faith. But even if someone tells you that he's a Christian, you still don't know. Even if someone tells you he's a Hare Krishna, you don't know whether that person is a karmi, vikarmi, karmi, jnani, yogi, or a bhakta. If someone tells you he's a Christian, what did he tell you? He didn't tell you anything. He told you a little something. But most religious people are karmis. In other words, they come to religion because they can... they come to milk God for cars and, what do you call them, diplomas and health and wives and husbands and God knows what not. Vast majority of religious people. So, according to the modes of nature, we develop particular faith. And therefore, we develop a particular we develop attraction for a particular type of religion. So, why am I saying this? Because it's not just a question of cognitive dissonance. Different things come to shape our faith. So when we say blind belief, we might be thinking just of a, you know, super irrational person who has accepted something as true and deeply accepted it as true because it makes him feel good. And it makes him feel good according to the modes. And that's most of us. Most people who you meet have not rationally investigated their beliefs. Vast majority of people. I don't want to say that that's evil, that's just maybe not overly too sophisticated, but that's just how we are. That's why one of the goals of Krishna consciousness is to propagate a Hare Krishna lifestyle. Just by changing the lifestyle of people, people's faith formulates. One of our goals is to bring down the industrial world. Please don't put this on the internet.
Hvala vam za predavanje. Ja bih htjela podijeliti prvo jednu anegdotu, vjerovatno će Rade Govinda Prabhu znat autora, to je jedan srpski autor i to su učile malo starije generacije od mene, ali ja sam to čula i jako mi je zanimljivo. Anegdota ide ovako, jedan jako, jako karizmatična osoba koja je ulijevala puno povjerenja u ljude. I ljudi su vjerovali toj osobi i taj čovjek je rekao, idite za mnom, ja vas vodim, ja sad postajem vaš vođa i vi za mnom. I oni za njim, znači preko brda i planina i danima i noćima i oni su stizali da bi na kraju cijelo to žrtvovanje se završilo tako što oni stignu do kraja stijene i vide da je dolje neka provalija. I sad im nije jasno zašto su tu stigli i onda su tek tada shvatili da taj čovjek koji ih je vodio, a kojem su vjerovali, je bio cijelo vrijeme slijep i slijedili su njega. E sad, jedan drugi znanstvenik kaže da, znači, sumnja je početak vjerovanja. Arjuna je imao te sumnje u početku i one su bile dobrodošle, jer da njih nije bilo, bili bi radikalni, ili je ili nije, ili bi radikalno pristali na nešto, ili bi radikalno ne pristali. Sad, mene zanima, znači, do koje mjere su te sumnje zapravo nama nužne i gdje one trebaju da prestanu, da bi se onaj baš razvila potpuna vjera.
What language should I speak in now? I had an interesting conversation with, and I'm not even sure if I want to quote the devotee because I can't remember the references. And he was referring to a conversation. He's a sannyasi who had a conversation with another sannyasi, very senior devotees both. And they said the very same thing, how the doubt feeds the faith. And he was quoting a Christian theologian, which I can't remember the name of. And he said that this doubting process continues forever. Now, typically we say that, you know, when you develop Krishna consciousness, there's no more doubt. But he said, no, it did just become of a different nature. It just reminded me of that. Now, your specific question was, what was the, at the end, where is the...
Ja sam se pitala do koje sumnje je ta sumnja nama u korist, a kad treba ona da se negdje prestane, da nam postane destrukcija, da nam narušava vjeru, kad ona, do koji limit neki nije, je pozitivna.
Well, we could say, you just, I was now reminded of another thing. You know, for years my service was taking care of brahmacharis. You know, young men who have come to Krishna consciousness, and most of that period was spent in America. And Americans are paranoid people. And when a person is paranoid, then they are hyper alert. And when someone's hyper alert, they also react very intensely and quickly and not always rationally. That's why when you meet a hyper alert person due to paranoia, you should not lie if you can. Because if the person detects any lying in you, it becomes immediately. And so these paranoid Americans would always question a lot of things. And in many ways that was good. But I also noticed with all this question that certain devotees would just, I still know their names after 20 years. They're such a pain. Their questioning was just destructive. In other words, their doubting process was coming from the depths of hell, of American paranoia. To where I told one devotee, okay, you gotta stop, because I'm done with answering your questions. Why? Because, and this was my advice to him, that he would ask all these questions that were expressions of his doubts. Namely, he was putting so much energy into finding inconsistencies. And I told him, put the same amount of energy into finding answers, and you won't have to talk to me. As a matter of fact, you won't even have these doubts. You won't have these questions. Now, that's just tamas. Tamas means darkness. And the quality of darkness is destruction. That's the prominent quality of tamas, destruction. And so those questions were not coming out of a desire to build something, but just to break something. Now, very often we have to break something in order to build something, but that's actually building. He was just destroying. Also, devotees prone to unnecessary and inappropriate criticizing, or just acting out of mode of ignorance, out of desire for destruction, bringing it all down. So that's one, to me at least, that's one clear case of inappropriate type of doubting. And that's not a question anymore of responding to these doubts. But where are these doubts coming from? That's the problem. Now, if the doubts are coming from a, you know, illuminated mind, illuminated by the mode of goodness, well, that's fine. It was very obvious to me and to everyone else that not only this person, but every such person who manifested in our group was really not seeking answers as much as he was seeking doubts, problems. put equal amount of energy into trying to understand as you're putting into trying not to understand. Is that okay?
Da, ja sam mislila u kontekstu Arjune, kako je zapravo ta sumnja njegova je bila konstruktivna jer ga je dovela, na kraju on nije bio siguran, jer ovako onako Krišna mu je pomogao, ali baš bila te vrste, nije bila destruktivna.
It could have been. You see, even when the doubt is coming from the mode of darkness. Oh, she's translating. So, you're translating her question,
yeah.
Or my answer?
No, question.
Question. Okay. So. Even when the doubt or the question is coming from the mode of darkness, still needs to be dealt with. But dealing with it is not giving rational answers. You don't accomplish anything. That person just continues on the destructive path. But what that person needs is to understand what's the nature of his doubting process. So he still needs help. So we could say that Arjuna's question was destructive. That's the nature of doubts. They want to bring something down. And if you don't respond well, there's destruction. If you respond well, there's construction. Prabhupada compares them to demons. Arjuna himself thinks of them as demons. So they're quite destructive. It's not easy to be a teacher. Very interesting. At this point, you're not really answering. There's no point answering the question, but you go behind the question, like, where the hell is this coming from? And you deal with that. Oh, 9:15. We're over. I'm going to stop here, and if there's any more discussion, we can let everyone else go take prasad, and we can, if anyone has questions, I'll be here a few more minutes. Grantarat Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.